Welcome to the Hill to Hill podcast. This is Kobe Vasquez. I'm here with Dylan Nezai.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me today.
Since June of this year, Hong Kong has been overwhelmed by civilian protests and mass demonstrations in favor of freedom, human rights, democracy, and opposition to the Chinese government. The protests have gone on for half a year already. As they become ever more fiery and dangerous, potential consequences increase in severity as the international community weighs in on the issue and the Chinese government faces pressure from within and without to resolve the crisis.
Let's begin with a bit of background on Hong Kong. Hong Kong is a semi-autonomous territory presided over by the People's Republic of China. It is a conglomeration of islands and peninsulas in coastal southeast China. Before 1997, the territory had changed hands between the British and Japanese since the Opium Wars of the 1840s. England acquired Hong Kong with a 99-year lease from the Qing Dynasty in 1898. China reacquired Hong Kong in 1997, but the Chinese Communist Party, or CCP, had agreed during negotiations to allow Hong Kong to retain some autonomy, which has come to mean its capitalist economy, human rights and civil liberties, and some level of self-governance. The agreement provided that the semi-autonomous status of Hong Kong would last until 2047, when the CCP will decide its future.
The catalyst for these protests was the extradition bill proposed in Hong Kong's government last spring. Under the leadership of pro-Beijing Chief Executive Carrie Lam, the government considered a bill to allow countries that do not have an extradition treaty with Hong Kong to extradite suspected criminals back to the country in which they allegedly committed the crime. In one high-profile case, a Hong Kong man strangled his pregnant girlfriend in Taiwan, stuffed her in a suitcase, and returned to Hong Kong, where he was immune from Taiwan's police force because Hong Kong does not have an extradition treaty with Taiwan. The bill would allow Taiwan to bring the man back for trial.
Let's not forget that the bill would be implemented retroactively.
That's a good point, Dylan. What exactly does that mean for the people of Hong Kong?
Well, if they were previously accused of committing crimes in the mainland, they could be extradited there if the new bill is passed. We don't know China's intentions, but this enables the CCP to punish dissidents who spoke out against Beijing in the past several years at least.
Wow, that truly is a scary prospect. We know the citizens of Hong Kong weren't the biggest fans of this bill. How was it received in Congress?
Well, the legislation was not well received by pro-democracy representatives in the Hong Kong government. After all, China and its supporters in Hong Kong could use this bill as justification for sending political activists and journalists to China, where they all too often disappear. Despite international law, and even without the bill, we still see journalists vanishing from Hong Kong, so the new extradition bill would make the problem even worse. The bill was met with fierce debate, tensions, and shows of frustration as pro-democracy and pro-Beijing government officials debated.
Let's take a closer look into these protests. They began on June 12th as hundreds of thousands of disgruntled and fearful Hong Kong citizens took to the streets to express their disapproval of the new extradition bill.
Nearly 2 million people protested in the days that followed, about 25% of Hong Kong's total population.
Chief Executive Lam suspended the bill indefinitely, but the protesters thought this wasn't enough. Throughout the summer months, several tense encounters occurred between protesters, counter-protesters, and police. As protests continue, police measures have become more intense. Police have used water cannons, rubber bullets, and tear gas to disperse protesters. On August 12th and 13th, the rest of the world saw flight delays and cancellations at Hong Kong Airport, as protesters had taken over the airport and occupied terminals. This sit-in brought international attention to this issue. On September 4th, Lam withdrew the extradition bill, but protesters kept pouring into the streets.
With the withdrawal of the bill, Lam promised to work on addressing Hong Kong's social injustices and bolster the ranks of Hong Kong's police's independent watchdog. Protesters had been wearing masks to obscure their identities since June. Protesting against China and Hong Kong could result in lifetime travel bans and struck fear into the hearts of protesters who still had family ties in the mainland. Hong Kong authorities banned face masks in October, but protesters were unfazed. The group of demonstrators had become so large, resilient, and diligent that they appeared unaffected by the authorities' attempts at containment and placation.
The protests are actually about increasing democracy and civil liberties in Hong Kong and resisting authoritarian China as a whole.
The extradition bill, according to an expert at the Council of Foreign Relations, was simply an excuse to increase Chinese government control over Hong Kong. The protesters in Hong Kong seem to agree with this assertion, although Chief Executive Lam has publicly stated the bill is about catching criminals like the man who killed his girlfriend. Although the extradition bill was completely withdrawn in September, Hong Kongers continue to protest.
They have a list of five demands. According to the BBC, they are withdrawal of the Hong Kong extradition bill. This demand has already been satisfied. Next, protesters who have been arrested must be granted amnesty. The protesters also demand an independent assessment of poor treatment of protesters by police. Additionally, the protests should not be characterized as riots and dismissed as such. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, the protesters are asking for complete universal suffrage. Right now, citizens get to vote for their leaders, but the candidates are pre-selected by the Chinese government. Hong Kongers want the ability to select candidates and vote them into office. Dylan, which of these demands do you think will be the most difficult for China to meet?
Given the past actions of the CCP government, it's unlikely that China will relinquish its power to choose candidates for the Hong Kong chief executive position and Hong Kong's legislative body. This would grant Hong Kong even more autonomy, which defies recent trends in this relationship between Hong Kong and Beijing and risks the future of Hong Kong as part of China.
In order to examine the continuity of protests and predict the future of this precarious situation, we now turn to a professor in the government department at Cornell University. He has spent time in China and specializes in East Asian international relations and Chinese foreign policy.
Welcome and thank you for coming.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So we've been talking a little bit about the recent protests in Hong Kong. Why hasn't China shut them down? Or why hasn't China stepped in to stop these protests?
Well, the simple answer will be there's no good choice for Beijing to step in. It's a very difficult situation to begin with. So if China tried to intervene more directly, that there's no better way unless maybe with more coercive way to really control the situation. Even if that work a short time, we won't know. I mean, now situation worse in the long run. So I see the situation here actually really reflect kind of a conscience inherent in this formula for governing Hong Kong after the turnover. That is one country system.
Yeah.
There's a inherent tensions within this formula, this framework, right? So there's, you see the problems between the one country and the two systems. And the demonstrations on street in Hong Kong just reflect this manifestation of many of the issues in this particular arrangement, but also, of course, in the larger context, reflect the social, economic, as well as political issues in Hong Kong.
Along that same line, what do you think this issue means to China? For example, why wouldn't China just back away from Hong Kong? What's keeping Beijing in this discussion?
Well, you know, the unification is a big deal for any Chinese government. The returning of Hong Kong to Chinese sovereignty, of course, was a huge national pride. In so many ways, the Chinese Communist Party's legitimacy rests on the nationalism or popular nationalism.
Yeah, theme, definitely. Right?
So, ensure the one country, that is one part of this one country system. In other words, the national sovereignty over Hong Kong remained the very important task for Beijing after the turnover. But given the systems part of the policy, and then you should allow the so-called the high degree of autonomy for Hong Kong. But we think this, again, the one country, two systems framework. And then, of course, the Hong Kong people, or majority of them, may aspire for even more freedom, or particularly, they aspire for more political law, right, which seem to be stimulated in the basic law, that is the meaning constitution governing Hong Kong after turnover. So that was, of course, the result of the Chinese-British negotiation in 1980s for the post-recovering arrangement. Before the turnover, Hong Kong was a British colony enjoying a freedom but not political rights. But the difference between pre-1997 and afterwards is that with the one country, two system arrangement, Hong Kong people see the prospects for democracy. Even that won't be the something to happen very soon, but that's give them hope. But for Beijing, I think that may happen, but the precondition will be ensuring the national sovereignty or ensuring one party authority. And then you can talk about, you know, whatever political right or freedom.
Wow. So that's a lot to digest, but I think the biggest thing you mentioned is the Beijing government wants to retain sovereignty and legitimacy, right? So there's this kind of government tension, too, between Hong Kong and Beijing. Can this situation continue indefinitely? Or, in other words, do you see a compromise or resolution in favor of either party in the near future?
Okay, I think the tensions there, we don't see the prospect in which this will come down anytime soon. And it's very, very difficult to say the Hong Kong, the pro-democracy movement or the activists in that movement are likely to accept the kind of compromise the Hong Kong, the special regions government, as well as Beijing's are willing to make.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they will be willing to make really substantial compromise. Also, on the other hand, I don't think the democracy movement will stop, you know,
yeah,
suddenly.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this will be a long kind of process of the interaction, action, reaction, and then also complicated by international forces, by international factors.
Thank you, Professor, for your time and your great insights.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Our guest has certainly given us a lot to think about regarding the future of Hong Kong.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about legitimacy, and I think that's really the key to understanding China's stance on this issue. As the professor said, the protests will continue as both sides have yet to put forth an acceptable compromise, if one even exists.
The Hong Kong protests have been truly concerning. We do not know what the future holds, but it will certainly reach beyond the parties involved and have a strong influence on the international stage. This has been the Hill to Hill podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and see you next time.